We're with Robert Lanza as we're talking about his theories of the universe. We're also talking about stem cell research. Can he clone a Neanderthal or a dinosaur? We'll take your calls with him next on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, Robert, can you clone a dinosaur? Is it doable?
Well, that's a funny question. I actually have a 6-foot brontosaurus bone at home that weighs 800 pounds, and it came from a dinosaur that was as big as my house. And the first question everyone asked me, are you going to clone it? You know, of course, we cloned the first endangered species. And what I tell them is that you can't clone from stone, that you need a living cell. So I think that the chances are slim that we'll be able to clone a Neanderthal or a dinosaur a la Jurassic Park soon. But I think that, that being said, I think that there are enough of a genetic match between the Neanderthal and humans, for instance, to solve many of the problems that currently exist. So one approach might be to start with human stem cells and then to change the regions of the DNA using techniques such as this techniques known as homologous recombination. And we might even have some success doing that today. I think the problem is that most of the tissues, say, from a dinosaur or a woolly mammoth are severely damaged. The soft tissue in a dinosaur, for instance, would be so destroyed that it would be very difficult, if not impossible, to figure out its genome. But that being said, if we found some DNA, we might be able to use computers to guesstimate the genome, what it might have looked like, and we could then use that knowledge to fill in some of the gaps. And so, but again, a lot of that's going to depend on the condition of the DNA that we found. So bottom line is we're unlikely to see any dinosaurs in your backyard anytime soon.
Why would we want to clone a dinosaur? Just for novelty to put in a zoo?
Well, that's exactly, you know, one of the questions that I've raised with the endangered species, that unless the natural habitat, you know, it still exists, that's all it would be. It would be a sideshow, and I'm not sure of the ethics of that. And I think the same thing would be is if you cloned a Neanderthal, you know, there are very serious ethical questions there.
Yeah, exactly. What do you do with him?
Exactly.
Let's take some calls. We'll go west of the Rockies. Eddie in Seattle, Washington. Eddie, thanks for calling.
Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
I heard you comment about deja vu, and I wanted to kind of throw a theory out there for you and see what you thought about it. I once had a dream that the space shuttle blew up. My mom told me to call NASA, tell them about it. They told me they get calls like that all the time. The shuttle went up right after that. Nothing happened. Then the next one blew up, and it just seemed so real, and it seemed so real in the dream. Now, I call that a premonition when you see something
sure.
before it happens, and I think premonitions and deja vu are related. And I think deja vu is seeing the past, and premonition is seeing into the future. And I think we have that ability because my theory is instead of being reincarnated into an animal or shape-shifting into an animal like some of the Native Americans may believe or into another person, I think we come back as ourselves and relive our lives again because I think we might be in a time paradox. Where in the future, maybe not the too distant future, something happens and everything explodes, and then all of a sudden time starts over again. And I just wanted to kind of get your comments on that theory, and I'll let you go to the next caller.
Yeah, well, I think your guess is as good as the next person's. I think our science is just so primitive at this point, I don't really know that anyone could really give you an answer for that. So, again, there's a lot we don't understand, and, you know, I certainly don't pretend to have the answer for that question. I'm sorry.
You know, let's talk a little bit more about the cloning of dinosaurs,
okay.
for example. And again, I agree with you on the ethical stand on that. It's like the, you know, the island of Dr. Moreau.
Mm-hmm.
But somebody sometime is going to do something like that.
Right.
There's no doubt about that.
Well, I mean, we've actually, for a moment, we did resurrect an extinct species. So there's something known as the Bucato mountain goat. The last sailor who was the last Bucato mountain goat died, actually, was the first mammal to go extinct this millennium. A tree fell and crushed her skull. Fortunately, the biologist had got a sample of skin from her before she died. And just actually a few years ago, they actually used a regular Spanish ibex, and they actually took frozen cells that they had, they thawed them, and they actually created this extinct animal. It was born. It died within minutes after it was born. I could have told them, you know, they should have some surfactant because we ran into that same problem. But for a brief while, that animal that had been extinct was indeed resurrected. I think that they're planning to repeat that. So we already have managed to take an extinct animal and resurrect it, however brief. So I think in the near future, you know, we will probably see that actually happen.
Okay, next up, let's go to John, Lincoln, Nebraska, first-time caller. John, go ahead.
Yes, I was in a bicycle accident 4 years ago, and I suffered a spinal cord injury.
Okay.
And I was curious about stem cells or for neuro cells.
Are they experimenting with that yet, Robert? Stem cells?
Actually, Geron, a company out in Palo Alto, out in California, actually was the only other company other than ACT that they got approval to use stem cells for spinal cord injuries, and they did initiate some safety studies on that. Unfortunately, that effort was abandoned. But there are indeed studies in animals where animals that have been paralyzed have been injected with stem cells, and they have been able to partially restore function to those paralyzed limbs. Again, in our particular studies that we just did recently, in what we call an EAE model, experimental autoimmune encephalitis, these animals become paralyzed, they lose the function of their hind limbs and then the forelimbs, and an injection of our embryonic stem cell-derived mesenchymal stem cells actually was able to prevent that paralysis altogether. So there's a lot of different cell types that I think we might be able to use for spinal cord injuries in the future.
Okay, next up we go to Barry in Rock Hill, South Carolina, east of the Rockies. Go ahead, Barry.
Hello, George. What a wonderful pleasure it is to speak to you again. Last time we talked, it was about good old Ed Leapskyman down at the Carl
Castle. That's right. That's right.
Anyway, this is for Dr. Lanza. Is it L-A-N-D-S-A?
L-A-N-Z-A.
Z-A. Thank you for telling me because I want to know that. Can I get your email address from your website?
Yes. It could. Yeah. One of them is Robert Lanza at yahoo.com.
Okay. Listen, I have macular degeneration in my left eye.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going away. I'm 69-year-old retired biochemist.
Okay.
And listen, aren't you at Wake Forest Bowman Gray School of Medicine?
I'm an adjunct professor there, yes.
Okay, yeah. Well, I'm only 2 hours away from you. I'm close to Charlotte, North Carolina. Uh-huh. And I want to, my retinologist has given me a Avastin injections in my left eye for 6 weeks, not to cure the macular degeneration, but to try to slow it down. And I am interested so much in trying to get to where I can be in Winston-Salem in 2 hours, and I would love to be some kind of research guinea pig to see if we can work out the stem cell thing that might help me and other people in the future. Is there any way I could get in touch with you and see about getting in something like that?
Yeah, well, for the moment right now with these FDA clinical trials, we actually have identified 4 sites, and those will be the only sites for the moment, and they include UCLA. We also have one up here in Boston, Mass Eye and Ear. There's Wills Eye and Ear in Philadelphia, then also Palmer down in Florida, and those are all the top eye institutes. So for the moment, for those clinical trials, you would need to be enrolled there. But for the next phase of these clinical trials, it may be more widespread, and then we may be able to do it, for instance, in Wake Forest or in that area as well.
Robert, if they begin to see astounding results,
yeah,
and I think they are, but will they speed things up for people?
Yeah, so what happens is the first step is do no harm. So they actually have us start out with very small numbers of cells in patients who are already legally blind, who already have very advanced stage. If we show they're safe, and as you're mentioning, we're already seeing efficacy that we shouldn't be seeing at this early point, they will allow us hopefully to go to younger patients where we'll hopefully see far more dramatic results. Because the goal of this therapy isn't necessarily to reverse blindness, but to prevent it altogether. So if we go into some of these patients, so for instance, in the next few weeks, we'll be treating patients for the first time with double the dose we started with. And if we see more dramatic results, I think, you know, the pressure will be on to try to accelerate these trials.
Okay, let's go to Scott, Fort Wayne, Indiana, on the wild card line. Go ahead, Scott.
How you doing, George?
Good. Okay, thanks.
I'm observing time on a PeopleNet system. I drive for a living, and I have a PeopleNet in my van, and I'm observing a second timer, and I'm counting 1,001, 1,002, and it's skipping 3, 5, sometimes 6 seconds ahead. How do you explain this?
Maybe you need a new battery? No, honestly, you know, I can't answer that one for you. You know, I'm not sure exactly what's going on there.
Is this the phenomenon that you're talking about, George? The time isn't time anymore. It's just skipping ahead.
It is. It is skipping way too fast. Maybe it's because you get older, Robert. I don't know.
Well, there are scientific studies that very, very clearly show that time, as we get older, subjectively passes, say, I think the number was up to 4 times faster than when we're young. So our perception of time as we get older actually, very scientifically and objectively, passes many, many fold quicker than it did when we were young. And that's a real phenomenon.
Okay, let's go to June in Lumberton, Mississippi, on the wild card line. Hi, June.
Hello, George, and happy late birthday.
Well, thank you.
Thank you for taking my call. Mr. Robert, I was reading about the mind calendar that at the end of this year we could possibly go through a photon belt.
Uh-huh.
And if this is so, is this going to change our building blocks and our amino acids and would our DNA change for a higher consciousness?
Hmm, interesting question.
Well, I hope they're wrong, because I certainly hope to be here next year. So, you know, I don't know that's going to occur, but based on the, you know, the scientific information I have, I think we're going to make it.
Will humankind change, though, Robert, if there's some kind of anomaly out there?
Certainly we know for a fact that, you know, I mean, obviously evolution is based on mutations, is based on changes to our DNA, and anything that will change or accelerate that process will modify, you know, the pace and the nature of evolution. So, yes, I mean, there are many natural environmental phenomena that would definitely change the course of evolution.
When the asteroid hit 60-plus million years ago and apparently wiped out the dinosaurs.
Right.
I find that hard to believe that every living creature would have died.
And it didn't. I think what you saw was it basically was one of the, you know, like sort of like a nuclear winter to some extent. And so it wiped out the larger animals, so that when you lost the dinosaurs, which were quite huge, went extinct, there were smaller animals, humans. One of their predecessors actually was a small rodent-like creature that, you know, actually eventually went up a tree. And so what it did is it created a niche that allowed for humans to evolve without the presence of dinosaurs. So it knocked out the larger animals on the planet.
If the dinosaurs weren't knocked out, would we be here?
Probably not. There's no way to know for sure, but certainly that allowed the other life on the planet to move ahead.
Do you agree with evolution, the Darwinian theory?
I think it's a considerable oversimplification. I think that, you know, it's sort of like, you know, a kid in the school. It's a nice story to tell. But I think there's a lot more to the picture. I think it's missing a very vital component, you know, which is the observer. And without that, the whole reason for evolution is just missing. So the whole driving force of evolution is consciousness. Is that we're basically, we are the force that basically, you know, allows you know, these probability waves to collapse, as the physicists like to say.
All right, let's go to John, Huntington Beach, California, Wildcard Line. John, thanks for calling.
Well, thank you. First time caller here, George.
Good,
I think
you
have a great show, especially with a person I know and had a great pleasure meeting on a few occasions, Dr. Robert Lanza. This is John Ridelli. I'm a current shareholder in the company that Bob is the leading scientific officer, called Advanced Cell Technology. For your listeners, ticker symbol ACTC. I was hoping Bob might update us on the latest news and results regarding the patients that they are treating in the trials, when we will treat the very next patient, and what are the chances that we might treat Dame Judi Dench?
Hey, John, how you doing? So, yeah, good to hear from you. So we've treated 7 patients as of today. We've been seeing, you know, pretty stunning results as of today. We're hoping to do the first patient with twice the number of cells in the coming weeks. We actually have had some discussions about Dame Judi Dench. She would be a candidate. We actually do have a modification that the FDA has gone along with that would allow us to treat if one eye was dry AMD and the other one was wet, which is what her situation is. So we're in dialogue, and that's a possibility.
You also talked about developing synthetic blood.
Yes. So we actually have the capacity now to create entire tubes of red blood cells from scratch in the laboratory. And it turns out that they actually can transport oxygen like normal blood. And we actually now have a new line that is what we call O negative. So it would, that blood that we make would be a universal donor. It would match virtually everyone listening to this program. So we now have those cells. We're making a master cell bank. And we've also discovered how to create the platelets, which of course are the cells that are responsible when you're in an accident for preventing clots. So we now can create those in a way that they form clots and are functional. So we're making significant progress making these red blood cells. We can make 100 billion red blood cells from one small 6-well plate of these embryonic stem cells.
All right, let's go to one more call before the break, and then we'll take final calls. East of the Rockies, Brian in Whitley City, Kentucky. Go ahead, Brian.
Yeah, I was just wanting to make a comment on the random number counters.
Sure.
No one ever really correlates the fact that when they stop, randomness ceases to exist. And it's just one of my theories that there's a multiverse synchronization happening when these big events go on and these number counters start acting funny. And could you elaborate on randomness for me a little?
Yeah, well, personally, I think randomness and order are really opposite sides of the same circle. So it's just really a system of logic. So that when we say that things are completely random or chaotic, and then someone else says, well, no, everything is determined, I think we're really talking about the same information system. It's just what direction we're addressing it. And so I think that whenever we describe a phenomenon, we have to be very mindful that that's just the surface, and that the more we dig, the more we're going to find things. As I was mentioning to George earlier about like knocking on a piece of wood, it seems solid, but the further we dig scientifically, the more we realize it's empty space.
We're going to come back with you, Robert. We'll take final phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. Lynn McTaggart joins us on our next Coast to Coast program, talking about her work, the field. She's got an intention experiment she wants to conduct on one U.S. city, so you'll be part of that experiment tomorrow. And also our first hour, Ancient Aliens, Giorgio Tsoukalos joins us. We'll be talking with him and how he thinks they may be going into year five. More to come on Coast to Coast AM. Robert, will you continue to do experiments on biocentrism, or are you done?
Well, basically that's a theory, but there are certainly new experiments that will be carried out in the coming years. This one known as scaled up superposition that will test this at the level of human beings, so that if that turns out the way I would expect, that would be one of the strongest scientific experiments proving or suggesting that what biocentrism says is correct.
And it very well may be. And if it is, and if more scientists jump on board, what will that do?
Well, I think it's just going to basically turn the way we view the world upside down. I think everything from evolution to the Big Bang, we're going to have to rethink all that.
Okay, let's go back to the phones. First up, let's go to Newport, Oregon. It's Simon or Simeon. Is it Simeon or Simon?
Simeon.
There you go, Simeon. Go ahead.
All right, thanks, George. Absolutely interesting show tonight. The time-space reality thing has always boggled my mind, and I just wanted to see if I could articulate this question enough to correct, because it just, the question itself boggles my mind, is that if, I'm sorry, are you still there?
Yep. Yeah.
Okay. If, with your example of the fabric record, if the past, present, future has always been there, then wouldn't that mean either that there has to be a reality or a space and time for every decision that every living creature that ever has been, is, or ever will be? There has to be something out there for that created, and are we continuously creating that, or is it already there?
Yes, you're dead on both.
Okay, and so, well, the other thing I was wondering as well is that, or if it is already there and we're just going through the motions of observing it so that it can exist.
Well, the way I like to think about it is like you're taking a ride out into the country. It's there, but you're exploring it. And so I think that that's more or less what the scenario might be like.
Okay.
Simple as that? Simple as that. Okay, let's go to first-time caller Jason, truck driving in Canada. Hi, Jason.
Hi, how are you guys doing?
Good, Jason. Yeah. Thank you.
That's good. Just bear with me here. I've never talked to 20 million people before, so. So I was just calling because I had a question. Has the guest ever done any research regarding consciousness and the relative to the left brain, right brain hemisphere phenomena, like what they've been investigating with the Monroe Institute for the last 50, 60 years? Because there was a really interesting video that I watched, a neurobiologist by the name of Jill Bolte Taylor. She had a stroke, and it was in the left side of her brain. And when that happened, then she ended up basically, her right brain kicked in, and basically instantly her perception of reality changed. And she did a keynote speech on it. You could find it on the internet. It was very, very interesting. And so it sounds like what you're talking about, and how basically what we perceive is what our reality is.
No, that's absolutely correct. I mean, there have been literally hundreds, if not thousands, of reports of injuries to the brain, or when you bisect the brain, you dramatically impact the perception of reality. There are all sorts of very weird phenomena that occur. So the brain, at least in terms of the way we understand it in terms of neurobiology, is very complex. So something as simple as just seeing something can be involved 10 different areas of the brain. And when you interfere with any one of those, you're going to alter that perception. And if you just think about it right now, as you look at anything, your eyes jerk around, you may close your eyes, you may move your head, but the world seems to stay stable. So there's all sorts of circuitry that allows you, even though you move your head, for the outside world to stay straight in front of you. But there are many, many components of this, and in the left side of the brain definitely has unique features that differ from the right side of the brain. And when you divorce those or you alter those, you alter perception.
As you were saying, if we get away from embryonic stem cells and go straight to the harvesting of, you know, one's own body, what is there to complain about? There's no argument anymore, is there?
Well, like I said, we can now produce embryonic stem cells without harming or destroying the embryo. We can now take blood or skin cells, as you say, without any controversy at all. There are no embryos involved, and I think even the Pope is on board with that.
And I would think that would be better, you know, the fact that you can use your own stem cells, right?
Exactly, because you're bypassing one of the biggest problems, and that is immune rejection. So if they're your own cells, they're a genetic match, and then you can inject them without worrying about using these powerful immunosuppressive drugs that have very serious side effects.
Okay, back to the phones we go. Chris is in Palm Springs, California. Chris, thanks for holding. Go ahead.
Hey, how you doing tonight?
Okay, Christopher, good.
Yeah.
You going to say anything? I guess not. So,
well, that was an easy question.
He needs stem cells. Let's go to Linwood in Jefferson, Texas, on the wildcard line. Go ahead.
Hi.
Hey.
I was calling to speak to the consciousness issue that was brought up.
Sure.
There was a book that I read a long time ago called Seth Speaks by Jane Roberts.
Oh, sure. Good book.
Okay, now in that book, basically the nature of physical reality is explained as follows. Consciousness manifests as ideas and emotions. Some ideas and emotions are perceived as objects which occupy a dimension we call space. Other ideas and emotions manifest or perceived as events in a dimension that we call time. And as physical beings, that's how we're wired to perceive reality, although a reality exists outside of our perception of it. I'll go offline for your comments.
Well, I think many of the mechanisms that you mentioned, I think, are correct. The bit about Seth, I'm not aware of that, so I can't speak to that end of it.
Though he is right about that.
Yeah. The way he described it, much of that is correct, yes.
Charles in Hawaii. Hey, Charles, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Sure. I'm wondering about the second law of thermodynamics because I studied it independently, and there's so much scientific belief in it, but if we could get rid of it, it would be so much more beautiful in the world, but that's not a legitimate reason to believe the second law of thermodynamics.
Well, I mean, you know, it's the second law of thermodynamics that makes the whole universe tick, and so the good news is that's what makes life possible. So it's basically, you know, we have systems that are running according to certain laws, and you know, like I said, I think that is basically the way we connect things together, using the current paradigm in terms of you know, an objective external reality.
You know what fascinates me about the universe, Robert, too, is it's everything's the same. The primordial soup that it probably could be found in our solar system probably would be in other solar systems too.
Mm-hmm.
It's just carbon copies of everything, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the same formula of events that occurred in this galaxy, you know, in stars and planets is occurring obviously in other galaxies as well.
Let's go to Allentown, Pennsylvania, and it is Roland there. Hey, Roland, go ahead.
Hi, George Noy, this is Roland.
Hi.
I'm a totally blind person. I've been listening to you for years, and I'm impressed with this Robert Lanzo.
He's good.
With the stem cell research. I was a patient of Dr. Hal McKenzie Freeman at Massachusetts Pioneer in the 80s to the 1990s.
Would you undergo, let me ask you, Roland, would you take stem cells now?
I would be willing to do that to regain at least some eyesight.
Good for you. One day, Robert, this is going to happen for him, isn't it?
Well, I mean, there are many components here. One is to use the stem cells to prevent the onset of blindness. The other would be to actually reverse the process, and we're seeing a little bit of that already in our clinical trials. Some of the other work we're doing is we have these stem cells that can turn into photoreceptor progenitors, and there's some initial work in animals that suggests that you may be able to connect those up to the eye after the photoreceptors are actually lost. And the existing paradigm was is that once you lose those photoreceptors, it's irreversible, but that may not be the case.
Any other questions, Roland?
How about an artificial eye? My left eye is artificial. And they're not ready for that yet.
No, probably not.
But my right eye, I can walk up to the hood of my stove in my kitchen and turn the light on underneath there, and I see the light.
You can see the light.
Perception. Or go up to the window, and I can move my hand back and forth.
You can see that.
My face and see a shadow.
Yeah, you can see
right.
That movement.
Well, yeah, many, like I said, the first few patients that we treated could only discern hand motion. And after we injected the cells, they were actually able to start counting fingers and reading letters on the visual acuity chart.
Oh, that's dramatic. When someone is born blind, Robert, mm-hmm. What has gone wrong?
Well, there can be many, many components. So obviously, you know, everywhere from the beginning of the eye where there are issues with the retina all the way through to the brain itself where that circuitry, where that information is processed. So blindness can occur at any step in that pathway.
And stem cells could fix any of those processes along the way?
It's theoretically possible. You know, we're obviously right now just focusing right now on the leading causes of blindness right now. So for macular degeneration, which affects 30 million people worldwide, we know the cause of that is the loss of these cells called the RPE, the retinal pigment epithelium.
Steve Wynn has that problem.
Retinitis pigmentosa, yeah. Right. So, yeah, there's literally dozens of these retinal degenerative diseases, and they're all caused by the same reason, that is the loss of these RPE. And so what we're doing now is using stem cells to make new healthy ones. So we're going after that. But there are many, many other eye diseases that we're working on right now as I'm speaking to you, things called like uveitis and glaucoma. And we have cells right now that we're testing that we think can help those disorders as well.
James in Long Beach, California. Go ahead, James.
Hi, George.
Hi.
I'm very interested in this man you have on here. I'm a 22-year-old college student, and I've been listening to you for a few years now.
Thank you.
But my question is, have either of you, sirs, had any experiences with DMT or dimethyltryptamine?
Other than talking about on the show, that's about it.
Well, I had the privilege of doing it or experiencing it when I was 20 years old, about 2 years ago. And you go into a bit of a trance, and although your body isn't, you know, fully, aware or activated, your mind goes somewhere else. And I was wondering, is that like just an expansion of the dream world? Is that... does my consciousness create it in reaction with that chemical? I just wanted to know a little bit more about that.
Yeah, so it's all the same process, and I think what many of the chemicals are doing is they're interfering with the process that you normally experience. And so you're getting very much like you get in a dream. And as I mentioned, it's the exact same phenomenon. In your dream, with your eyes closed, your mind is creating a spatial temporal reality. I mean, you actually are creating something that you're perceiving as space, even though you're in bed, and time. And so what you can do in many of these instances is when you interrupt that pathway, you will actually get a greater sense of what might really be going on that you wouldn't otherwise.
It is indeed a psychedelic.
Indeed.
Yeah, it is. Okay, who's next? We go to Mark in Park City, Utah. Welcome to the show. Go ahead, Mark.
Yes, I noticed we are always talking about reality. What is the difference? I work with a lot of handicapped people who are blind sometimes, but what's the difference between those who are blind and those who are possibly schizophrenic? How do you determine, well, I guess it's their own reality, but where do you draw the line between schizophrenia and the reality of it?
Okay, so there's two things. One is obviously, you know, when you're dealing with one of the problems you're dealing with, blindness is a physical disorder where, you know, the light hitting your eye isn't being processed by the brain. So that's just simply a defect in the circuitry of your body. Schizophrenia, on the other hand, for instance, you know, when I was actually in medical school taking psychiatry, I remember my first patient seemed completely normal, and then you'd have a discussion, and she'd say, well, Queen Elizabeth was she had a discussion with Queen Elizabeth in the morning, and she was in her bathing suit, and they were talking. And so that clearly, you know, schizophrenia or schizoaffective disorders, that is where there's a distortion in your perception of reality. And to that person, that reality is just as real. I mean, just like A Beautiful Mind, the movie, to that person, those illusions are just as real as the table and chair that you sit on. So again, reality is very complex, and even your dreams is the same process as reality. So, but a schizophrenia clearly is an alteration of the way you're perceiving reality versus blindness, which is a you know, in most instances, a physical disorder.
Kevin, Missoula, Montana, first time caller. Kevin, you're on with Robert Lanza.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good.
Hi. My question is, it's kind of convoluted. I'm here at work and catching bits and pieces here, but I heard somebody talk about the space-time continuum, and then and kind of got to thinking when you started talking about neurobiology and stuff like that. I'm a social work and psychology major at the University of Montana, and I guess my question is how would you define or explain metaphysical perception, like something like astral projection?
I don't know if you can answer that. Can you, Robert?
Yeah, no, I can't answer that one. Sorry.
I'll take a stab at it, though.
Okay.
I think that truly there's something going on in the subconscious mind that allows people to, you know, separate into their astral plane, their astral body. When we talk about the complexities of the universe, this is part of it. I mean, the body, the soul, everything that you want to talk about is included in all of this. It is, Robert, I think, even a much bigger picture than even most can comprehend.
Absolutely. And then some.
And then some, indeed. Only about a minute or so left. Again, tell us the website, where you can get your works.
Okay, my professional website is robertlanza.com, and the website for biocentrism is robertlanzabiocentrism.com, and you can get the book on amazon.com or at your bookstore.
Do you travel much? Speeches?
I do. I try to keep it to a minimum, but I do quite a bit, yes.
Well, people are interested in this, and also, of course, the stem cell research, which is going to get bigger and bigger and bigger. Let's just hope this country stays at the forefront. Are you there?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I thought you fell asleep.
100%. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
I agree with you.
All right, my friend. Be well.
Okay, you too.
Okay. Stem cells. You read all about it. You can go to his website, robertlanza.com, and one day they'll be able to do incredible things like growing noses. They're doing ears right now. Thanks, Robert. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesour, Stephanie Smith, George Knapp, John B. Wells, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.